You ready? Okay. Okay, welcome back to our series of budget work sessions for the Board of County Commissioners. Today we begin with the Assessor's Office and we turn it over to Chris Polson, our County Assessor.
Thank you. I'm going to start off with a brief overview and then we'll get into the budget parts. At the end of it, we'll get into the measurement metrics that we've been doing. So the first slide is property taxes. I want you to understand what it is we do. All three commissioners understand it, but for the general public, Utah County property taxes were very heavy on the real estate side. 90% of the taxes are real estate. We're very much less emphasis on centrally assessed, where the state average is 8.6, we're actually around 4%. And so that's good and bad. But of this 90% in real estate, that's the breakout. And again, this is the property taxable value. So about 70% is residential, 24% commercial. There's a lot less commercial, but because they're taxed at 100%, their value impact is greater than the 55% residential exemption. This is over time. This is the taxable value. So in 2002, we're around $15 billion.
So one interesting metric, and I don't know if you have a general idea that doesn't show up here. I wouldn't expect you to know off the top of your head, but of this residential, how much do we think is primary versus rental properties or second, right? Because even large apartment buildings would show up in this residential.
Yeah, it does. And the reason for that is the large apartment complexes actually get the residential exemption, even though they're investment properties. And so they actually are only taxed at 55% of value.
So it's only the second homes that are not a primary residence.
That's
so this
correct.
Is going to be a small fraction of.
Yeah. And later on, we'll talk a little bit about units versus parcels. You have the same dynamic because you have multiple units on a parcel. And so we'll talk about that a little bit too.
Okay.
But it's a good observation because density right now is a big thing in Utah County.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you'll see permits later on in this presentation that reflect that. So in 2002, I came in office in 2003. So I went back to 2002 and you can see how things have grown. Even though we've grown about 60,000 parcels, we're almost triple the value as far as taxable value. This trends very highly with the average home price because 68% of the taxable value is based on residences. So, and this is the distribution of property taxes. So primarily my office impacts the school districts more than any other entity in the county. And for that reason, the legislature has set up a separate revenues for the assessing and collecting. And that was primarily driven because of that, the impact that it has on other entities. So all the expenses in my office are directly tied to assessing and collecting levies. And all of the major projects in my office are legislatively mandated. And so we'll get into each piece of that. So for the 2020 budget, we're around $6 million. And there's a breakout of how that was allocated out in the budget. For 2021, we're about the same in the proposed budget. Personnel didn't change a lot. We'll have a few adjustments we'll talk about. Internal service funds is primarily we're installing a new computer system and IT went up a little bit. Contracts, we'll get into that in a minute too. So that's by classification how my budget breaks out. So personnel, since it's the biggest part, this is a org chart of my office. And so we have four positions in red. Those are vacant positions, two in commercial and two in residential section. The green is time-limited positions that we maintain year after year. The orange, that's supposed to be orange. Commissioner Ivey can probably tell me exactly what color that is from his photography background.
I'd say but,
there's three orange, two in the middle are time-limited positions, and then there's one on the right that we'll talk about for personal property. The other part that's unique about the org chart is up on top. We're actually sharing an administrative assistant between the recorder, the treasurer, and the assessor's office, and that's worked out well. One of the big driving forces in my office is permits, and it's very labor intensive. So I want to give you a breakout of 2019. We're looking at numbers that are untypical. We've seen this back in 2006 and 7 and part of 8. But these required that we actually shift resources out of property reviews and put them on new construction. And so this is what we did in 2008. As it came up to 2008, we had everybody working new construction, nobody was doing reviews. And after 2008, everything collapsed, so we shifted people into reviews to catch up. I don't see that as a pattern that we can maintain in the future because all projections say we're going to continue to grow. And so there's not going to be that lag. So we're going to talk about the project that Commissioner Ivey and I have been working on for the last couple of years. And we'll go into more detail on how that's going to work in the future. So this is 2019 compared to the first three quarters of 2020 on building permits. So Commissioner Ainge asked about high density. You'll notice that apartments dropped off. But what's going on is investors are buying individual units in high density projects. And so that demand has shifted. So we've actually had a higher demand in high density than anticipated. So down on the bottom, you can see the breakout. So we have 9 appraisers working, doing new growth. And that's their workload back in 2019. And we're fairly close to that. But because of COVID, a few things have backed off and commercial has shifted a little bit. So there's a breakdown of my personnel budget, which is 82% of the budget. There was 2 positions that were approved in 2020 that never got into the staffing plan. Again, COVID had a lot to do with that. We anticipated construction was going to drop off, but it didn't. And we just never got around to where we could truly train somebody. You can have somebody work at home, but training somebody working from home is a different issue. So we backed off and we didn't add those 2 positions to the staffing plan and just made internal changes. Again, the reviews were hindered because of that.
So I think that's worth noting, right, is this is your budgeted number for 2020, but essentially what you're saying is you're going to end up coming in underneath your budgeted number in 2020.
Right.
Because you didn't, you know, you had those positions approved and you weren't able to hire them during this year. So we're
proposing to add 1 more personal property specialist, and we'll talk about that in a minute. 2 time limit positions, 2 analysts out of BYU. Again, we'll go over that. And then the part that's not in here is there's going to be an insurance waiver. I didn't add that in there because I had no idea what it's going to be, but it'll be minimal, and it'll be in that other column. So that's why that's lower. That probably should come in fairly close. So the personnel adjustments, hiring somebody in personal property, we actually in 2019 received a new mandate for residential exemption validation. I contacted Washington County. They've been doing this for over a decade. And they indicated they have a 1.5 FTE allocated to that process. I think we can do it. with less, even though we're going to be doing twice the volume because we set things up a little bit differently here. And so temporarily, we pulled somebody out of personal property that was doing manufactured housing. And they were working part-time in it, and then our appraisal auditor was working half-time in it. So the appraisal auditor is going to go back to full-time to what they were doing. We're going to shift this person full-time into this, and I need somebody to backfill into personal property based on that. So that's why we're asking for one more personal property position. The two time-limited positions that are new. Last year, one of the things we wanted to look into was continuous modeling. We got a hold of the company. We worked our way through it. By the time we got done, they said it was going to be about $720,000 over a three-year period. So at that point, we didn't see the project as being feasible for the outcome or the results. So there was really no benefit for us. However, continuous modeling is a concept that we do want to pursue. So we found through SPSS, which is a software that we're currently using in the office, they have a module. We can actually lease the module for $500 a month and bring in an intern to test it that will work with Burt Garfield. And long term, it'll be far less expensive. And it'll we're hoping that this, it's more of a black box than the other AI project that we're looking at, but we're hoping we can see the results that will allow us to go forward with this project. So this is in a testing stage at this point.
So what are you modeling?
These will be residential homes. So right now...
Residential loans?
Homes.
Oh, homes.
Yeah, so they represent... Residential represents 68% of the value out there. And they actually represent over 70% of the properties. So this is what we're looking at, is this continuous modeling using artificial, it's an algorithm where you continuously feed in cells and it calibrates nightly. Zillow does something like this. They revalue over 100 million homes every night based on new data.
So you're doing that so you can look at the value. When you do your assessment on values, you're as accurate as possible when it comes to that.
Yeah, we're very accurate now, and I'll get to some slides that do some comparisons. But what happens is in January through April, Burt Garfield is doing nothing but running these new models for the year. With this continuous modeling, come February 1st, all the modeled values will be ready, and all we have to do is look at the outliers. And so our dispersion should shrink a little bit. I'm not seeing it going to shrink a lot because we're already at that threshold of there's really nowhere for us to go. Burt's done a wonderful job at modeling. But on the flip side of that, if anything happened to Burt, my modeling's not so good. I used to do it, and I'll show you where my numbers used to be and where Burt's is now. But it's also a preventative act in case something happens to Burt. We can bring somebody in, and this process will basically be able to run. Burt will be able to tweak it and make it better, and hopefully we can bring somebody in to help out if something happened to Burt. So this is also preventative. The other part of the second intern we're bringing in is we're going to use, years ago, probably 15 years ago, I created a product called EasyComp, and it was an automated product that pulled in comparables. And IT took it from my spreadsheet and put it into a Power Builder application. My staff used it for a while, but the math and the other statistics behind it was a little too complicated, and it kind of fizzled out. Over the last 3 years, Burt and I have been working on an algorithm that will select comparable properties for a subject property. And we've got it working in SPSS, and Burt's numbers are looking really good. So we now want to take that to the next step and put it back into an algorithm, but using an R language, which is a statistical language. And then eventually we will put it into a application where the appraisers can use it. But one of our biggest fears is that last line. If we get back into 2009 after the 2008 bubble burst, appeals went up 4 times, and we just don't have the staff to handle that type of load. So if we're ever in that environment again, using a tool like this where we can pull in comparables on the fly will reduce the time necessary on every appeal. And in some aspects, when we talk to the property owner, they could withdraw the appeal based on the information provided. There are some counties that use a product called Spatialist. In Boulder, Colorado, they actually mail out the comparables on the valuation notices. And they've seen a huge decrease when they did that. We can't do that in Utah because we're a non-disclosure state. But that's the impact that we're hoping to have by doing this. The Internal Service Fund is increasing just 0.5%. A lot of that has to do with we're installing a new software program, which will be our primary software in our office. And there's integration and other aspects with that. So IT has increased their portion of programming. The next piece is the contracts. That was the third piece of the primary pieces. Pictometry, we renegotiated a 6-year extension. It went up, I want to say $12,000 a year. We're getting a higher resolution. And we're also, because we're growing, we have to expand the footprint that we're getting the imagery on.
How many times a year do they go around? Just once, or they go around?
We do it once every 2 years.
Once every 2 years.
Because Salt Lake is a much, much smaller county geographically, they fly every year. And it actually costs them less to fly every year than it costs us to fly once every 2 years, just because of the footprint. So
even though we only do it every 2 years, it still goes up that $12,000 a year, even on the years that we're not doing it?
It's a higher resolution that we're getting, and it's also new technology that they've implemented. So the price has gone up slightly because of that and because we're actually getting more imagery. Because it's a higher resolution, we're getting more shots per square foot. I mean, not square foot, but per square mile. And so we're getting more imagery. So you're going to see larger and larger. We're talking about terabytes of information when they do a fly and they deliver to us.
But so the benefit is that you don't have to go out there personally and
yeah, we leverage off of this, and other departments leverage off this too, because even though we're paying for it, we make it available to other departments. But you're right, and we'll get into that also as to how we're going to leverage it in the property reviews. So the SPS modeler lease with SAS is $6,000, and that comes under contracts. That's new. And then the property characteristic review that we've just been talking about, we'll go into detail on that in a minute. So the property characteristic review is required. Doing it the conventional way takes 7 to 8 appraisers. We've talked about this and the direction that Commissioner Ivey and I have been working on to eliminate that 5-year cycle. We want to reduce it down to a 2-year cycle that only requires 2 appraisers using technology. And the idea is to reduce the number of items not picked up from 2 years to 5 years. You've seen that with charter schools where we just didn't get notified. The odds of them being missed for multiple years will be reduced, along with every other type of property. So that's our objective here, is to reduce it down to a 2-year cycle. So aerial change detection. The concept is the measurement of pixels. So you will take an older image and a newer image, and in this case, they're 2 years separated, and they will actually compare the pixels inside that parcel to determine if anything's different. And that is how the typical change detection works. What it doesn't do is it doesn't tell me if I have that building in my assessment computer program or not. All it's telling me is during this 2-year period, something is different or there is no difference. So to get around that.
Is that based just off the building itself? Because there could be a lot of stuff that goes on.
No, it's actually based on, it'll take.
So if they had a major landscaping project go on, the pixels right. would all change. And it, so you'd have to go look at that.
It would pick up on that. Some change detections use heat maps. So that part doesn't come into play as much. But with a heat map, it's really looking at rooftops and other things and see how much it's changed. The one we're using is with, that we're looking at actually looks at the pixels and compares the pixels. So landscaping would come into play on that. Hmm. It'd be flagged as something different. And then it would go through to stage 2 as it needs a desktop review. So because this isn't telling me if I actually have the building or not, for 2020, we actually, and it was approved for last budget, we actually took out of our CAMAS system, CAMAS stands for Computer-Aided Mass Appraisal System. We actually took the sketches out of the buildings, and we hired a company that, it's the sketching company. They offer this service to convert our sketches into a shapefile, and then they georeference them over the top of the images in the aerial photography. And then they gave us a report that came back, which was an exception report of anything that didn't line up or match. So because of trees and other things, we had a 50% that had a match and we won't have to look at. Another 30% came in as, yeah, it looks good. There's a couple things covering it up, but we don't think that's going to be an issue. So that left 20%. Of that 20%, half of that is something that's we're not sure about. The other half is you probably need to look at this. And it's really because there's no way to tell through this type of process whether anything changed or not. Some of it had to do with new construction, too. We had a vacant lot, and now we have a house on it. We didn't provide them with something, so they're saying take a look at it. We had 2,000 of these sketches come back only because of timing between when we extracted the information and when the recorder's office with the GIS layer. So there is some error that's built into that, and that's those properties also get kicked into a desktop review because of that. So now we're connected to my CAMAS system. And then this is the desktop review. It's with iLookAbout. We lease this. It utilizes pictometry, our GIS layer, and some connections to our CAMAS system where we can have somebody, instead of going out and looking at all these properties, can now sit behind the desk and look at a majority of the properties. And what they can't determine here, we then flag for a field review. So again, this is going to greatly reduce the manpower we need out in the field. So for 2021, we're going to get some new aerials that will be delivered in July. So we need to update the GIS layer with the sketches. So there's about 14,000 sketches that are either new or have been edited. So we'll have to update those in the system, and it'll create the layer that you see off to the right. What's new, and this is, we're getting into territory that nobody's doing. There are people that are doing this, and we're talking to a couple of them right now, but they actually take the imagery. So this will be the new imagery coming in, and they'll create a shapefile based off the imagery on the roof line. And right now, Utah County's been doing this, but they've been doing it manually for years. So we're actually, GIS department will be able to benefit from this project. They won't have to continue to do this anymore. This is the part that is new that nobody's doing, but it's feasible. And I've had two vendors tell me that they believe the algorithm will work. If you can match up a shapefile to another shapefile using AI, you should be able to tell me whether that matches or not. So because we're taking and creating shapefiles from imagery and we also have the sketch, we should be able to compare the two using the same. It's an algorithm that's used in facial recognition. And where it won't be an exact match because of the roof lines, but it'll be enough of a match to know whether it's the same image or not, or the same shape.
Same shape, same footprint.
So by doing this, this is the one piece that I think will take us to the next level. And so the typical change detection, we're still going to use that because that does, what we just talked about isn't going to pick up on swimming pools or gazebos and all those types of things we pick up in barns. But so we'll still do that. You can see on the far right, we have a vacant lot. We still have a vacant lot, but it'll flag the other improvements as something different. So we'll use the change detection for that. One benefit, and this has nothing to do with what we're talking about today, but the same technology is used in Florida to, after a hurricane, to determine how much destruction was done by the hurricane. So if we ever have a natural disaster here, a fire coming through or an earthquake, it is possible that we could use the same technology to try to determine how much of the property was lost during that piece. Because there is actually code in there that says natural disasters, we have to prorate a value based on what happened. So this is something in the future that for preventative that we may leverage if such an event occurred. And then we already talked about the iLookabout. So all the exceptions are run through the desktop before any field reviews occur. So a breakdown on this, even though it's a 5-year project right now, this comparison breaks it down onto a 2-year because the new process is 2 years. And so it's about $500,000 for 7 appraisers multiplied by 2. So we're looking at just over $1 million in just staff using a conventional method. If we pull this off, we'll be down to 2 appraisers and then all the software. So we're looking at about, the cost is about half of what it would cost us to do it conventionally. So our 2020 objectives, we're currently implementing a new computer system. It was supposed to be implemented in July, and hopefully at the end of the month, it will be implemented. The review process that we started is contingent on the new computer system being in because we have to reference through integration on the property characteristics. So that's actually been put on hold until we get this computer system in, and then we can map to the property characteristics that we need. And then the final one was the analysis of the continuous valuation. We did that, and it appeared that it was just far too costly for the benefits that we would receive. So we actually terminated that project. So those are the things that we wanted to get done. And as I said, the new computer system will be implemented by the end of the month, which brings us to our objectives. In 2021, our primary objective is the valuation rule, and it has to come off of this new computer system. So of everything up there that we've talked about, this is our number one concern, is whatever has to happen to make this happen. That's what we're going to put our emphasis on. The continuous projects or the analysis projects are the two we talked about that we have part-time people working on. For the performance measures, we talked briefly about this in department head meeting about what is expected on those. Rudy mentioned that whatever the performance measures are, they need to represent 65% of what your primary tasks are. They said, don't worry about the trending because this is new for most departments, but what I'm going to show you, we have been doing and trending for a long period of time. And then the other thing I got out of department head meeting was county comparisons and how we line up with other counties. I'll be showing that also. because everything I do in my office is mandated legislatively, it is also statistically measured annually. And so we have over 20 years of data of telling us how we're performing, not only with, against ourselves, but also against other counties. So we're going to go over that. Just briefly, the tests that are done are based on a coefficient of dispersion. It's done for different property types. I just want to bring this up to show you what the standards are. And it's really just a bell-shaped curve. So one standard deviation is 60%, or two out of three properties. The next one is 95%, which is the two standard deviations, which pretty much represents everything but the outliers. So as we're going through this, we have a property mix, as we talked about before. Residential makes up 79% of the properties and 68% of the values. And that's the top line. So in 2002, that was the year before I came into office. And so they were out of compliance on commercial. The others, they were in compliance, but they had received corrective action orders 7 out of the 8 years to keep them in compliance. So when I came in, the next piece was in 2006. This is the first time that residential properties were actually all reappraised at the same time since 1977. And so I had created a valuation model that was applied, and we got that below the COD of 10 for the first time. Commercial at this point, when I came into office, commercial is all done on paper. And so it took us a while to get all the accounts electronic. And so you're still seeing a high COD there. We didn't receive a corrective action order because the state tax commission determined after their analysis that they had no idea how to fix it. If they issued a corrective action order, that didn't mean that it would actually improve the values. So we came to an agreement that I would continue on the path that I was continuing on to improve it internally. And they justified their actions of no corrective action orders in commercial based on that discussion.
So Chris, is this pulled from, what data do they use to measure this?
They actually use cells. So they will take every cell that's available to you. If you buy a property, you'll receive something in the mail that says, and it's from the state tax commission asking you questions about that transaction. And so part of it's from that. The residential is actually pulled from the MLS. And so the MLS cells in residential is what they use for that analysis.
So it's measuring our county's current assessed value versus the transaction value.
Yes.
And that's how it will. Okay.
And so
I was wondering if they use actual appeal results. That's not really part of it. It's
not.
Yeah.
No, these are the actual transactions that we have in the database on residential. And then...
And the number really represents...
The coefficient of dispersion is a percentage away from the...
From the mean?
From the mean.
The median, actually.
Median, okay.
I'm sorry, I said mean. Median. Bert's right. That's why his statistical models are better than mine.
So this is just measuring how, on average, how closely we are to the actual sales price of the homes.
So the lower the number, obviously, the better off you are. That means there's more equitable the lower the number. So that's why they have these standards. So by 2012, we were looking pretty good. The bubble had burst in 2008. And because we already had the model set up for residential, we were able to revalue everything every year using those models. And so that got us through that period. Bert came on shortly after 12 and began refining the model. So in 2016, you can see how Bert's really brought those down into into an area that you really can't improve much more from where they're at. So now I want to go over how we compare to other counties in Utah. So what you're looking at is at, this represents about 70% of the properties in Utah out of five counties. So the five-year average is on the far right. So this is residential. If you get something less than 4.5 or 5 right in that area, there's a concept called noise. It's every transaction has so much noise in it. There was a study done by Mike Ireland and Pat O'Connor, and they measured that noise out. What they did is they took transactions of property that sold and then resold, and then they did a time adjustment on it. Anything that had an addition or was fixed up or anything like that, they threw out. So what they actually got was just this property really didn't change from this period to this period. They did a time adjustment on it, and based on the time adjustment, whatever was left would what you would classify as just noise. As a buyer that's not sophisticated or a seller who just wants to get out. All this stuff is in there. And so as you make those comparisons, they came to the conclusion that noise represents about 5%. And so what you're seeing in Salt Lake and Utah County in some years is you're right on that threshold of noise. So the next one is commercial. We're very comparable to Salt Lake on the commercial side. And then vacant land. We switched everything over onto a GIS system years ago. And I think the reason we're getting, I don't want to take anything away from our people, but we also, because of our growth, we get a lot of subdivision lots. And so those subdivision lots seem to dominate the data in the population. And that helps us get those numbers down. So as long as there's growth, we have more data in those subdivision lots than other counties. Like Weber and Davis, they don't nearly have the subdivision lots that we have. So they're going to have more dispersion based on lack of data, or we have more data. So we went over this slide briefly. Everything we do is either by standard or by rule or by code. And State Tax Commission annually reviews all of this and gives corrective action orders to correct. So since I've been in office, we have never received a corrective action order. Measurement 2 is a property reviews. This is a state report that we have to provide annually. This is the 5-year review cycle that we talked about earlier. In 2017, we had 6,700 properties that hadn't been reviewed over the last 5 years. And we've been trying to get that cleaned up. By 2018, we did have it cleaned up. 2019 is the first time we used a prototype on this review process, and you can see the difference there, how it loads up the front end. The next year it drops down into the next bracket, but we're keeping it all cleaned up. So this is what we're looking at to improve on, and we're hoping that going into the future, it will be heavily weighted on the first two slots, the first 24 months. And very little in after that. So I just got a couple more slides. The percent total parcel increases. So this is the last 5 years. Our properties have been splitting and because we're growing. Washington County is also one of the fastest growing counties in the nation. They're about half our size. So this is based on a percentage, not a number count. The auditor's office sent this to me. I thought this was interesting. I didn't realize, I knew we had a lot of permits, but I didn't know we were number 8 in the nation. Wow. And all of you are aware of the 4-year The thing that really impacts here is, in order to catch Salt Lake in 40 years, we have to grow faster, and not percentage-wise, number-wise, which means everything in my office, we have a higher workload than Salt Lake does. If we didn't, we'd never catch them. And this is my last slide. This is the budget comparisons between the counties. So the parcel count is 2019 along with the 2019 approved budgets. So we're actually operating on a budget compared to the other counties. They're similar to Weber and Davis, who haven't been seeing the type of growth that we've been seeing. The type of growth and the budgets correlated with Washington County, you can see that their growth is similar to ours, where they're half the size, and they're working off a much higher budget. In 2020, that part of that was adjusted, and then the proposed budget will be up to 200,000 parcels for 2021, and it'll be around $30 a parcel at that point.
Chris, what do you think, when you look at these numbers, is there a natural, as you reach a certain scale, you have to invest in technology and people, and then over time it blends back down? I'm just kind of curious. You know, we're going up on the budget per parcel. And is that more of a steady state? What do you think that Weber is able to do as smaller than us to have lower, or maybe they don't have, you know, they're not investing in the same coefficient of...
That last column, you can see the growth. I mean, these are the parcel increases from one year to the next, just in residential. And so even though they're half our size, they're 1/4 to 1/5 the workload on new construction. And it's even worse than that. I remember I cited something to you that for every one that Weber does, we do 10. That was actually based on units, where this is based on parcels. So when you talk about apartment buildings and condos and all that, we're just growing in high density at such a fast rate that...
Well, that might be interesting to look at then. I still don't necessarily know how to articulate it. You do as your department, but if more of the workload is on the new parcels, then having a separate column here that's cost per new parcel is also a help, because then that would show us probably significantly lower, right?
And maybe to better explain what we're doing that Weber's not, earlier in the conversation I said as permits get higher and higher, we actually shift people away from the reviews and everybody. So everybody is doing new construction. Weber's not doing that. They have people that are maintaining the reviews and maintaining the new construction. So we're shifting our resources constantly based on an unknown variable to us, and that is how many building permits are issued by the cities. And so we constantly adjust resources. And as I said, in 2008, we pulled it off because the bubble resulted in fewer permits after that. So we then shifted resources out of new construction when the demand was not there, and put them into catching up the reviews that were ignored and were actually out of compliance on. So that is, I think, why we're able to do things with less money, is because we do ignore things when we prioritize, and we prioritize new construction because that is new revenue to everyone. Where reappraisal and we still reappraise everything, but the property characteristic reviews don't drive any revenue. And so we have a tendency to ignore that when demand is higher in other areas. But we're still statutory required to maintain a certain level of it. Does that answer part of it?
It does. It answers it. I still just, this is great data. I mean, your whole presentation has had incredible data. This is really helpful. I think it's helpful for the public. And I think We're not going to answer it here, maybe, but I think it's interesting for you to kind of think of what does the next 5 years look like? As this budget goes up 31, do you think that as you scale, it goes down to 30? Or do you see it creeping more toward Salt Lake? And how does that, what's your view on it as you set a goal?
I've been thinking about this because Salt Lake's at 39. But they allocate funds in places that I probably won't allocate funds to. We're more streamlined, and that's the way it's always been. Short story. When I first came into office, I went to a meeting with Salt Lake, Weber Davis. We were all in the same system at that point. We were not on the agenda at all. Utah County wasn't. I mentioned in the meeting that we had this little program that we were playing with and like to demo it in the next meeting. And there were some laughs and stuff, but they put us on the agenda for the next meeting. We demoed what ended up being in Salt Lake, their primary batching and workload project, because after we demoed it, the supervisor over that section wouldn't even leave the building until I promised her that we would send them this program. And then 6 months later, Utah County was the agenda. There's a lot of things that Salt Lake has benefited from us, and there's things that we benefited from Salt Lake because we have this open relationship with them. Right now, they are actually trying to implement the same software that we're trying to implement. And when it comes to cost, it is very different up there because they actually have a project manager they hired full-time to do nothing but ensure that that product is installed in the assessor's office. And the treasurer's office has a project manager 100% for that project. And that's something we've never done here. And it's really just given the department and just said, you know, good luck. They contact the IT department as needed. And Salt Lake takes a very different perspective on it. It's a computer system, and it's the IT department that drives it, and it's the IT department that puts those project managers in those offices to ensure that it stays on pace. So you're seeing some of that in that $39, things that they do that we haven't done.
I think that kind of goes to the point. Whenever I see, you know, budget per parcel and swings differently, and we always look at them in the sense of how many are in that county, I normally will go to, well, smaller counties still have the same statutory requirements to go after it too. I don't know where their budget to parcels come in at. I would assume that just because you're a smaller county, you're still going to have to put manpower into getting the parcels correct. And you can't, just because you have less people in the county doesn't mean that you can hire a quarter of a person to do it. There's still going to have to be one person there. And probably second, it's hard to look at budget per parcel for me unless we know exactly what the budgets are. Because like you mentioned, you do things different than they do. You may allocate a little bit differently. And so it's hard to compare if we're actually comparing straight across.
That's really a management issue because we are all under the same statute. And so we're all required to do the same thing. And so I compare larger counties because typically workloads and other things are similar. When you get down into a fourth and fifth class county, as you're pointing out, it is very different because they just rely on a cost approach, and that's about all they can do. We don't use cost on residential because we're actually using transactions, sales transactions, to determine what those values should be. So our processes are different. They are actually the CODs that I showed you. They actually have a different standard because they're smaller too. So they can actually have more dispersion than what we have. So these counties are all required to maintain the same level of assessment. And they represent 70% of the state.
Right.
So we fall in between Salt Lake and the rest.
It's just interesting that their management style must be similar to Salt Lake's then for that to be that high, like that 36, you know, 39, when they're their population is quite significantly less than Salt Lake is, or their parcels. I shouldn't say parcels is significantly less.
And they actually have, of the assessing and collecting levies of all of these counties, Washington County has the highest. And so, significantly more than what we have. So they are putting more money into it because they are growing. I mean, they're very similar to how we are growing when you take their parcel count compared to the new growth that's going on down there.
Yeah.
We've always practiced, I don't know how much time we have left, but as I started in 2002 and started to explain how we got up to the present, our management style has always been a Kaizen approach. And so we're constantly trying to improve. We get to a point where right now we can't really improve the CODs that much because we're at the point that they really can't go anywhere. That doesn't mean we can't improve the processes. And that's why Commissioner Iovine and I have been talking about how do we improve this review process. And that's not only is it going to save us money, but it's going to create a process that we can maintain in the future. Because I think part of what Commissioner Ainge is asking is, as you keep getting closer and closer to Salt Lake, are we going to be $39? And I don't think so. I think we'll be somewhere between the 27 and the 36.
Well, and you know, the other thing that I was trying to highlight there that I just think is relevant for long-term planning is just that sometimes it's okay if our budgets are going up as in a scaling up operation because of new processes and technology that you're implementing. It's helpful sometimes. And if there's something that I'm missing that is just going to drag this up over time, then that's helpful. But what's really compelling is if you can show how for the next few years, the next couple of years, these processes and this technology is driving the budget per parcel up, but that it's allowing an operation that then is scaled and can start lowering that cost per parcel down in the out years, right? That then justifies this investment
right.
in technology and process.
And as you're pointing out, only technology can do that.
Right.
I had an interesting conversation a few years ago where the son of a former assessor of Utah County came in my office. And I showed him around what we're doing, and because he remembers as a kid running around and seeing what Dad was doing. And the bottom line is he said, you know, Dad could never produce what you're producing right now. And my response to his dad never had the technology to produce what I'm producing right now. And that's the big difference. That's why we're switching over to a new computer system. That's why we're investing in these new contracts for SaaS leasing of computer programs for analysis. I mean, we're getting more and more into the fringe of what can we do with artificial intelligence in an algorithm versus sending somebody out? Because there was a time when we were sending different people into the same area, and it's really a training issue, but the area was creating more dispersion because they're collecting data differently. And so I came back to my staff and I'm like, why are we doing this? Because at the end of the day, we're worse off than we were when we started this. And that's when we started putting people into areas instead of having them all go into the same area, because even if they create dispersion, it's the same dispersion in one area. It's not everywhere. And then we can adjust for that in the models. And so part of this is to get away from that subjectiveness of reporting what's there and get more into the objective of what's really necessary and what do we need.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
We'll just continue it.
I'm just going to stop the audio recording.
Mm-hmm. You can just keep it. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, we can transition right here. Everyone's here.